Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Honestly, it works out better. My personality isn't exactly the most agreeable, so to be
told. Well, and can you imagine if you were in the courtroom and, like, you would be mispronouncing the judge's name? You wouldn't remember the name of who you were defending or prosecuting. You would be... I mean, it would be a barrage of mispronunciation. So this is good. You could do it here
understand.
And edit it out.
What are you suggesting? Or what are you suggesting?
Me and all the listeners know exactly what I'm suggesting.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. And first of all, apologies that we did not have a episode on Tuesday, but I am traveling. And I left the adapter that I needed for my microphone. And I realized
it happens. What can you do?
Seriously? I am making all kinds of lists and stuff like that. And of course, like the one thing, it's just one that I don't need it on my desktop. I need it on my laptop. And currently right now I am on the smallest screen. So we'll see how this all goes.
Otherwise known as the size screen that most other humans use. But Mercedes is used to mega desk with 14 monitors and three televisions. The rest of us are working on a 15-inch MacBook Pro. So welcome to our world, Miss Amy.
I'm like in a corner on the smallest desk with my little laptop and monitor. Oh my gosh. Okay. So what are we talking about today? We have gotten a lot of questions and there's been a lot of discussion about the how the media puts it, the Maryland father who was wrongly deported to El Salvador. His name is Kilmar Abrego Garcia.
That is not how I say it. I butcher it every time, but I appreciate the accent.
So we're going to talk about who he is. I'm going to do my very best to explain the actually very complicated legal situation that he is in that, frankly, gives both sides kind of like they're both right, but they're both kind of picking the narrative. And then there's a very big difference between the legal argument versus the political argument. And so we're going to try and kind of parse this out and everything like that, because there's a lot of debate about this guy. First of all, are you ready to get into this, Rachel?
I got to move
my monitor over here because this setup is just not working for me. Holy smokes. Okay.
Mercedes is very high maintenance with her workspace, as you can tell.
My microphone is over on the wrong side. My computer is over here. Okay. Anyway, so the moment that he got into the news, he was immediately portrayed as a loving Maryland father of three with an autistic child who had been wrongly deported to El Salvador, to the El Salvadorian prison, the notorious prison that
it's CECOT. I think CECOT, I believe is the abbreviation. Or maybe that's not an abbreviation. That might just be what they call it. I do not know.
Well, he's there. He's in CECOT in El Salvador. This happened. He was arrested March 12, 2025, while he was driving with his son. And I think within 3 days, he was gone. Sent to El Salvador. So, yeah, March 12th, sent to El Salvador, March 15th.
Yeah, it was very quick.
Let me move my microphone. I'm trying to look at my notes and it's a little... Hello. Okay, there we go. Stop rolling your eyes at me, Rachel. So, the moment that he was deported, the administration was identifying him as MS-13.
But the media immediately was starting to say that he was wrongly deported. Now, to give the media a smidgen of credit, the administration did admit that there was like a paperwork mix-up and that he was wrongly deported within that paperwork mix-up. Now, let me explain what happened. So back in 2019, he was arrested Now, the information initially about his arrest and the narrative, or I don't want to say the narrative, but the facts around his arrest were kind of vague. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of documentation publicly. Most of it
very little going.
It was all like the news media was reporting that he had been at a Home Depot parking lot as a day laborer, and that in the process of him being at the Home Depot, he got caught up and he was arrested or detained with, I think, two or three other individuals mm-hmm. who were identified as MS-13. Now, the narrative that they're trying to portray is that this Maryland father, who's an illegal immigrant, was in Home Depot doing his best to just find some day labor, and he has no control with who he was hanging out with or who was also there at the same time, and he got caught up in that arrest.
I think that they were trying to do the, he was swept into this like group that he had no affiliation with. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I think also going backwards just a little bit, it's important to, like Masadi and I always like to do, kind of notice the trends with the media and what they are saying and what they are kind of omitting.
Yes.
Purposefully, they really didn't talk much about the fact that Garcia entered the country illegally in 2012. He did not seek asylum. We do not know what port of entry he came in. He's here illegally. And so he had already been in the country illegally for almost 7 years when he was initially detained in 2019 by ICE. So it's just something that they conveniently kind of leave out. They'll just be like, he was swept up in this. He's being wrongfully detained, but they don't necessarily remind you that he had been living illegally in the country for close to 7 years.
Well, and he entered, according to him, because eventually he was detained in this Home Depot situation. The individuals he was found with had marijuana on them. They were suspected because somebody, I believe one of the officers, and now this was the information that was released, because I read the documentation yesterday. So yesterday, Pam Bondi released several documents about this detention. And it's called this gang intake form, where a lot of times I think the officer that filled it out was like a gang task force officer. And so the individuals that he was arrested with were known gang members. Like, they recognized them as he is of MS-13. This is his rank and everything. So I think two of those individuals were immediately identified. And then the document, the intake form, also mentions a credible confidential informant confirmed that Abrego was also MS-13 affiliated and provided his rank and his, I think the group that he was with, the Western group of MS-13. Mm-hmm. There were two other things that I found interesting that had been omitted. So one of the things that was being reported often in the news media was, oh, he was just wearing a Bulls hat, and the Bulls hat,
Chicago Bulls, if you...
Yeah, Chicago Bulls hat, and that they were making it seem as very common. However, when you read the report, I believe it's like the bull has dollar bills covering mm-hmm. their mouth, eyes, and ears.
Yeah. See no evil, hear no evil, do no evil.
Which is supposed to be something that is, which actually happens to match a tattoo that one of the other individuals, now it wasn't a bull's tattoo, but it was like a tattoo that would do the same kind of messaging of the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And so now it was just, I think with Abrego, their main focus on that intake form was just the clothing, his hoodie and his hat. They didn't make any mention of a tattoo. However, the tattooing, apparently, which is what the report says, is much more significant as you raise in the ranks of the gang affiliate. So the higher up you are in the ranks, the more tattoos you're going to have. And that a lot of times you don't have tattoos or you're only allowed to wear this type of insignias, like his sweatshirt and his baseball cap, especially if you're among other gang members, if it's approved by them and it ranks like for maybe like you are a recruit or you're someone who's possibly eligible or you're just like in a lower ranking. Mm-hmm. So that's how the intake form categorized each of them. Now, this is where we kind of get into the legal situation. Okay.
But I think it serves us to mention, like, by the time Pam Bondi released those documents yesterday and other documents also came out yesterday, various court appearances or some documents around, which we'll get to, around domestic violence that his wife had entered, like, the narrative had already been crafted for so long that it almost felt too late for some of those documents to gain traction because we'd already been told, the narrative had already been spun, that this is a completely innocent guy who, yeah, he was in the country illegally, but we should be sympathetic to him because he has a wife and children and he really didn't do anything wrong and he deserves due process. And then this tranche of documents comes out yesterday and it's, well, and this is after Boasberg. We'll get to all that, but I should say, like, the timing and the handling of the messaging was not great.
Not great.
So
ideal.
No.
Well, and it's not just that. It's immediately Trump swept this person up. It was a perfect picture of, like, how this happens. They don't really focus on the fact that he's been here illegally since 2012 when he was, like, 16 years old. He's a Maryland father of three. Actually, two of the children aren't his. Mm-hmm. Only one of them is his. Not that that particularly matters, but it kind of brings in a different, it's just not as straight up as it is. Mm-hmm. But so in 2019, when he is detained, he is with, I don't think he's married to his wife.
Not Jennifer, yet, I don't believe.
Not yet. They were just together. So he is detained. At the time that he is detained, he has already been in the country illegally.
7 years.
Yeah. Now.
But you'll hear none of that. Like, I have listened to so many stories, so many iterations of this story through legacy media. And almost none of them even really touch on the fact that he was illegally in the country for 6 or 7 years prior to his arrest by ICE. And they don't really mention much about anything that has to do with gang affiliation. In fact, they actually outright say there's absolutely no evidence he was part of MS-13. So the messaging is wildly different from the legacy media and what the administration and Homeland Security and the DOJ is saying. I mean, they couldn't be more opposite, really.
Well, also at the time where all this is initially happening and getting reported, the combating narrative is that, for example, the confidential informant who said that he was gang affiliated, there's a lot of, and honestly, I have looked into this as much as I can, and I read the stories that of people that are saying that that informant wasn't trustworthy, that the officer that said it wasn't trustworthy. I think I've seen a report that maybe the officer that said it had been dismissed at some point or something, but the problem here is that, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's like partisan news reporting that are already kind of giving us incomplete information. And I'm not saying that can't not be true. I'm just saying that it's fair to question. It's hard to trust on both sides.
Yeah, it's hard to trust sources that give you incomplete information when all of a sudden they're like, no, but this is it. We want you to trust our reporting and what we're saying. Please forget that we didn't give you the whole story the first time. Now trust us for sure. You know what I mean?
Well, and also, like, the whole thing. So eventually when he goes to court during this detention in 2019, he is initially requesting asylum. Now, the judge pretty quickly, the immigration judge, and here's a reminder too with everybody, and I keep saying this, when we're talking about judges here, these are immigration judges under the executive branch through Homeland Security. Because this isn't the judicial
like a district
branch.
Court judge. So, yeah, there's a big difference. And again, they also don't mention that very often in the reporting either, to make that delineation for people who don't get in the weeds on this kind of stuff. They're not understanding the difference. And it's important to understand.
Well, and the difference matters because when you're dealing with immigration issues, it's under Homeland Security. It's a national security issue.
Yes. And it's under the executive branch jurisdiction, which is important as well.
Yeah. So immediately the judge is, you were supposed to claim asylum within a year. You've been here for 7 years. No. Now, then there are within the filings that I read, Garcia makes a case that he was forced to come to the United States at 16 years old because there was another gang called the Barrio 18 where he lived that was harassing his mother, who had a pupuseria, which is like a stuffed El Salvadorian tortilla. They're really freaking good, by
Delicious.
The way.
Delicious. Like, really good. We have really good. Listen, side note. We have a gas station that sells them, like, on the street. We have to drive by every single time we go to church. And we are going a lot this week because it's Holy Week. And I have read about Garcia's mother's store many times this week. And I'm like, Sean, we are stopping at the gas station on the way to Monday, Thursday, because I have a hankering for that now. I about it very much.
They're delicious. Anyways, so mom had a pupuseria. She was trying to run the business. Basic gang extortion situation where the gang comes in and is extorting her for, quote, rent. And then when she could, if she couldn't pay up, they were like, well, hand us over one of your sons, essentially, to be a gang member. The older son left to the United States. And then I think they moved around once or twice, but they only moved around within 15, 20 minutes. And then they threatened the family again, and that they threatened to hurt and take Abrego. And so they sent him to the United States with his brother. So that is the claim of why he cannot go back, because if he goes back, this Barrio 18 gang is going to kill him. Now, remember, this is 2019.
Okay, because I was going to say that gang now,
it's no longer an issue. Present.
It's no longer an issue. They don't exist anymore. And his mother's store has closed. Yeah. The El Salvadoran president made this very clear in his Oval Office meeting.
That comes up later because the time in 2019. So because of this, he gets granted a withholding of removal where there's also no time limit on this. So it's not like he had to file for it during a certain amount of time. It's also, there is a process that is required of the state to remove or take away that withholding of removal. And the burden of proof to do that is with the government once it's been issued. So that's where the big sticky situation.
The federal government federal government or the state government. Okay. Yeah. And all of this is happening when he's living in Maryland still, correct?
Yes, correct.
Great.
So now this is 2019. Again, I've already said that like 15 times. Anyways, he can't be deported back to El Salvador. That is still in place at the time that he is arrested with his son now in 2025. So that is basically the anchor, and that is saying to everyone or why he was wrongfully deported, because even if he was El Salvadorian, which he is, and he was being sent back to El Salvador, and even even if he's been identified, this is where it gets kind of sticky, because if he's been identified as an MS-13 gang member,
the national security risk.
And correct. And the state has assigned the MS-13
as a terrorist gang, group,
as a terrorist organization through the Alien Enemies Act. Mm-hmm. Does that change things? Now, according to my research, it does not. He still has to go through a process to remove this withholding or to like negate this withholding removal. So still what he should have been done, I think, is been kept in detention, gone through the process of removing that, and then deported. And so that's where we kind of end up currently in this, I don't know, challenging legal narrative.
Trump
challenge.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time.
exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
My question then is, understanding all of these details, with the Alien Enemies Act, does that act allow the executive branch, the president, to supersede the law that would need to be taken to remove that? That's my question. Because then they're going to argue under the Alien Enemies Act, this is a terrorist group. It needs to be handled immediately because it's a threat to national security, and therefore we're not going to do the proper procedures to get rid of the withholding.
Well, the issue is that, remember, then this case ended up before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled 09 that, I mean, what they basically ruled is that the lower court needs to clarify what it means to facilitate his return, because the lower court said, I forget the name, the judge, Paula Zinks or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, she had ruled that he had to be returned to the United States, and basically the Trump administration was disputing that. The Supreme Court ruled that they didn't necessarily rule that, yes, he has to come back to the United States, but they did rule that the lower court had to clarify what facilitating his return meant. But they did say that he did have a right to due process, because their argument is that if you're going to be identifying these people as gang members, they should have a right to dispute that. Like, you can't just label them a gang member and leave. And that, for me, before we go into, because right now we're just talking about the legal aspect of this, the political aspect and the political narrative is a whole other ball game. In a debate about how you want to spend this political capital on each side. But for me, I do absolutely have a problem with the fact that this administration currently, I get the idea, if you have gang members here in the United States, and I get that, obviously, if you have someone who's a known gang member who's been arrested, and then because during the administration has just been bonded, detained, released back, you have a record of them. Or especially with our relationship with El Salvador now, El Salvador tells you, hey, we know this person, and they went to the United States. You know what I mean? Something that confirms something that they are actually, the plethora of tattoos that you see on them. Okay, fine. I get detaining them and sending them over there. My issue right now is I do not like the fact that there are individuals, and we have to recognize that there are individuals that would possibly, like Garcia, who would possibly fall within this gray area. And it's one thing to deport someone and send them back to their country. I don't have a problem with him getting deported back to El Salvador. I don't have a problem with him getting deported, and let's say El Salvador doesn't want him and they send him to, I don't know, Guatemala or whatever. My issue is them being sent to the prison. Because let's say you do get swept up. Let's say you aren't a gang member. Let's say you were a gang member and then you're no longer a gang member, and you get arrested and you get sent to this super max insane prison in El Salvador that has, I guess, arguably no process to necessarily get you out. You know what I mean? Even that is kind of questionable. And then there's a debate because the Trump administration is paying El Salvador to house or to hold these individuals, people would argue, which I think rightfully, that they are still under the control of the United States, because they're like a warden. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so this other debate of, well, he's in El Salvador now and he's an El Salvadorian citizen, and we no longer have control of him. I'm like, yes, but also you could stop paying for him. Do you know what I mean? And then do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I think that there's multiple layers to this story. And I think that somebody can both agree with the fact that he was illegal. There is mounting evidence, plenty of evidence, in my opinion, that he was affiliated with MS-13, that he was a domestic abuser, and that you would like him deported.
Yes.
And also have an issue with the rollout and how it happened. And I wanted to go back real quick to the Supreme Court ruling because I think it's important because both sides of the story are claiming victory with the Supreme Court.
That's the other thing.
Which doesn't happen very often. Usually there's a very clear loser and a very clear winner. And so I read the, give me the word. It's early in the morning. So
an opinion?
Excuse me. Yes, I read the opinion. There we go. Thank you. And essentially what it said is that the judge overreached in ordering the administration to, quote, effectuate, close quote, Garcia's return and must give, quote, due regard for the deference owed to the executive branch in conduct of foreign affairs. So that's where the Trump administration is like, boom, like we have, there's deference to us as the executive branch in these kinds of matters. And there was a lot of nuance, in my opinion, in the Supreme Court ruling, opinion, excuse me. The SCOTUS didn't say to clarify what effectuate means, but rather clarify directive. So the district court judge does not, the district court judge does not read it that way and is reading directive as effectuate, but the Trump administration is definitely has the upper hand stating that directive is the injunction, which then Trump would be given authority over foreign affairs based on Article 2. It's like everybody's claiming
victory.
Yes, when, I mean, it's not as cut and dry as everybody wants to make it seem, myself included. I think that's our tendency is to go, nope, case closed, when there's more to the story and there's more coming out like every hour. So you had an outline for this episode.
I was so annoyed.
A bunch of stuff comes out yesterday about this guy. You know what I mean? A domestic abuse claim from his, because the media also, the media that lots of people are armed with when they come at me for my reporting is, well, but look at the facts from Reuters, from New York Times, from CNN. They all have a narrative too, which is what people need to understand. And the narrative that they're pushing is this guy was this gentle, loving father from Maryland who was ripped away from his family and is now going to rot in a prison. And he wasn't involved in whatever. So they have claimed that narrative. But then yesterday, stuff came out that is painting a different picture and one that the Trump administration had actually been already talking about. So my question is, where was that information? Where were these court records? Where was all of this stuff that was dropped yesterday? Why wasn't that brought forward a couple of weeks ago? Is it because they actually didn't know about it? And it took like Bill Malusian and Andy Ngo on Twitter to get it out? I mean, come on, the citizen journalist is doing it again. Or did they know and they were just like, yeah, we don't need to? Because that to me is the more, not more upsetting, but equally upsetting part is that the rollout or the talking about it, the specs, the optics are not great, in my opinion. This was not handled the way
it wasn't handled well. And unfortunately, it was handled, I guess, kind of chaotically, which is sometimes the MO with this administration.
Well, it seems
do you know
like
what I mean?
It's the brand, and that's what a lot of people, a lot of progressives, are attacking the administration for. So you'd think that they would try and, I don't know.
I mean, the issue is, of course, immediately, like you said, the media is doing its best to picture and create an emotional image to villainize the administration. And then the administration is also, no, he's a horrible, murderous gang member, or like by proxy, he could be potentially a horrible, because he's never been, that's the other thing. This man was never accused of murdering anyone or anything. And at the time, there was also like, the administration was saying that he was dangerous, MS-13 gang member, human trafficker, all these other things. The human trafficking story, I was like, where is this information coming from? Mm-hmm. Okay. So now before I move on, I just want to say at this point, regardless of before all this information comes out and there's this entire debate, I think it would have been better for the administration to be like, you know what? We did make a mistake. He should not have been deported. We'll bring him back. We'll do the due process, because the fact of the matter is that he's here illegally. So it's not like he's going to go back to his wife to go sleep in his bed and live happily ever after. This isn't the Biden administration. And then he's going to go disappear into the darkness. He's going to come back to the United States and he's going to be detained in a facility. And then the judge is more likely than not going to be like, hey, this gang is no longer a threat. Literally, El Salvador is considered one of the safest South American countries now to go to. Your life is no longer under threat. So this withholding removal no longer applies. Go home.
I think that it would have done a lot of favors for the administration had they handled it like that.
But that's instead, they decided to like engage in this narrative battle. And mm-hmm. it's at this point, you've gotten to this point where it's like, it's almost like a pride thing, which I get because the media is so irritating. You don't want to give them a cookie. Do you know what I mean?
Not just irritating, but outright callous, in my opinion. I mean, you have this happening and then running parallel to it is the story of Rachel Morin.
Yes, that nobody's talking about.
She's murdered by an illegal Venezuelan immigrant. MS-13 in the same state. And you have one of Maryland's senators hopping, like carting his butt through Dulles Airport yesterday to hop on a plane to go to El Salvador to try and bring Garcia back. Zero mention about the murdered woman with multiple children. She has children. Why aren't we talking about this Maryland mother? That's my question. And so you have these things running parallel. So it's not just that the media and Democrat politicians are irritating. It's that in their pursuit of taking down Trump and every single thing he does, they refuse to even have a smidge of compassion for how illegal immigration is impacting real American lives. And that grinds on me and it makes me mad because there's a part of me that's very real and thinks if this man is what the media is saying, I am sad for his wife and his children right now because I can tap into that. I can tap into that real human part of me. But when I see a senator in El Salvador spending arguably taxpayer dollars flying there to grandstand and have a bunch of microphones
documenting the whole thing.
Yeah, but you do nothing for the people who are impacted directly by actual MS and MS-13 gang members in your state. I have a problem with that. And so it's all now what I feel like it is more than anything is it's a battle for the emotional response that people are going to have because both sides, I think, have an issue when they're looking at the judicial side of it. I think that you could argue that.
Yeah, I don't think the judicial side is a cut and dry situation. And that's something that needs to be battled out in the courts. And I think right now what the administration is trying to do is they believe that they have the upper hand because this is a national security issue, because it is an illegal immigration, because that in itself is specifically under the executive branch. They believe that they would have an upper hand over the other side in their arguments. It just would have been easier if you just would have been like, yeah, we made a mistake and then just detained him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, then going back and saying we didn't make a mistake over and over and over again, trying to kind of stop that narrative.
So it's been fresh. Now, what's been interesting is now that's kind of where we stand. You've had the wife come out and speak and she did like a presser. You have all the news media backing this guy and using the narrative. While, like you said, Rachel Moran's murderer has just been convicted. Nobody's like talking about that. And then slowly, I saw it first. I don't know if it was yesterday. Yesterday was what? Wednesday. So I don't know if I saw it maybe on Tuesday, late afternoon. But yeah, because I made the phone call yesterday. So late afternoon on Tuesday, Andy Ngo publishes on his X feed a screenshot, just a one document screenshot that has both parties' names. So Abrego's name and his wife's name, which I believe is Jennifer. And there's a case number and it says it's a domestic violence case in Upper Marlboro. He publishes that. There's not a whole lot of additional context to it. It doesn't say, he says it was a protection order, but he doesn't attach a protection order. There's no additional information as to why the protection order happened or anything like that. And people start speculating that, like, I saw people in the comments saying, oh, this probably isn't real. Or because I went and looked it up on the Maryland judicial records and it didn't show up. I also looked for it on the Maryland judicial records and didn't find it. However, because I was very curious, and this is before everybody else, I called the court and I was like, does this case number exist? Is it real? No, somebody got ahead of me. And by the time I confirmed it, that's when the additional Bill Malugin released the additional information about the domestic protection order claim. And then I think a little bit later, somebody, I can't remember who it was, released the intake form that his then, I don't know if they were married yet. No. They were married because, by the way, I forgot to mention this, but while he was being detained in 2019 and trying to make his case for asylum and trying to stay in the United States, they got married, which I thought was very interesting
timing. Mm-hmm.
That, like, now that you're potentially going to get deported and you've managed to stay off the radar for 7 years, you're marrying an American citizen who happens to be pregnant with your child. Like, you could have done that beforehand. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But I digress. So they were married at the time, and the intake form says she is requesting an order of protection against him. And this was 2022, I believe, May of 2022. So now we're 2 years after the original detainment, where he has punched her, he has ripped her clothes off, she is bruised. I mean, it got to the point where, like, she requested an order of protection.
Mm-hmm. So a much different narrative from what she's saying now, describing him as an excellent father, and a very sympathetic view is being taken, not just by the media, but by her. Now, that's what she's saying now, when 2 years ago he was punching her and bruising her, manhandling her, basically.
Yeah, that got revealed and changed, and it's her handwriting. You can find that's all over X right now. She fills that out.
I have it in my stories if you want to look for it.
In addition to that, the other thing that got released literally last night, as I'm trying to go to sleep and updating my outline, because the news cycle is so rude and has no respect whatsoever for the amount of work I put in. The Tennessee Star reports that in 2022, this one to me is wild, okay? And I'm like, did nobody else? It just blows my mind. It is so emblematic, the fact that this, yes, you can criticize the administration for not having the protective order, and they had mentioned trafficking, but not really providing detailed information. Fine. Okay, whatever. But, like, it is the job of the media to investigate these things. Mm-hmm. And they're just worried about this poor man who father of through one of who's autistic. And you know what I mean? Like, that narrative. Well, in 2022, there was a traffic stop in Tennessee. This is a Tennessee Star, where Garcia was stopped while transporting 7 passengers from Texas to Maryland. He had no driver's license at the time. And they're like, this dude is in this car. The documentation said they were illegal. 7 of them. And they suspected that of trafficking, that he was trafficking individuals from Texas to Maryland. The Highway Patrol contacted the FBI, Christopher Wray, and the FBI basically told them, document them, take pictures of them, let them go.
Wow.
Okay. Now, also, the Tennessee Star reports that Garcia was on a government watch list in addition to that. But that particular detail seems to be disputed as to whether it was Garcia or one of the other passengers in the car. But the point is that regardless if it was Garcia or another passenger in the car, if you're on some terrorist government watch list or whatever, maybe you shouldn't be. Actually, even if you're not, if there's 8 illegals in a car traveling from Texas to Maryland, maybe you shouldn't just, like, go about your way and do what, you know what I mean?
But why wasn't this acted? I mean, we know why. It was the Biden administration. It's a totally different view of how the law should be implemented and acted upon. And it's just wild to me. He illegally came in the country in 2012, 2019, detained by ICE. We have this filing by his wife of domestic abuse. Then you have this traffic stop where he's clearly involved in if it's not human trafficking, it's shady, weird, whatever it is, and you're driving without a license and you have a bunch of people who probably didn't have, or who I'm sure he wasn't the only one that they knew about that at the time. And yet the FBI is just like, well, I guess write down their names,
and then give them a slap
on the wrist, and then it's fine. We'll deal with it later. That's wild to me. I mean,
well,
yeah, exactly. What?
Well, and I think that is an interesting, this isn't in my notes, but it like pops up into my head as like this administration, it's been really frustrating because you had the previous administration who expanded parole like to a ridiculous level by an order. It wasn't through legislation. It was through, it was Mayorkas that was just basically through, because it is, what do you call it? An administrative department. The secretary, which you can, oh my gosh, my brain's not working. You can, like with the stroke of a pen, you can adjust orders or you can expand rules, regulations, which is one of the issues with the executive branch right now that the administration is trying to deal with. And they expanded parole. And so they really lowered the bar of what the requirement of parole was. And also they lowered the bar and dictated like how we actually deal with illegal immigration, which is why we ended up with this influx of illegals into the United States, which the administration argues was an invasion, an invasion facilitated by the previous administration to provide the cover of they're here legally, but they're only here legally because they completely changed the entire purpose of the law.
Right. Yeah.
They like completely changed it. So now you have an administration who's coming in, who's trying to rectify that because it is a promise that the administration made. And everywhere they turn, you have a completely different branch of the government that has nothing to do with the executive powers of national security, dictating to them what they can and cannot do.
It's interesting to me that the media didn't have any problem at all when the Biden administration would kind of play a tennis match with who is going to change orders or who's going to dictate this federal law is going to change. They were doing all the same things that the Trump administration is doing right now under their power as well. It just,
it fit a narrative.
So they can expand parole for a bunch of people who are illegally in the country or who have committed acts of crime, violence, whatever. And the media was silent. They didn't say anything. But now, and some could argue equally sloppily, the Trump administration is rectifying that, and they are in a tizzy. It is a constitutional crisis. Democracy is in peril, and it's just very obvious. And I wonder if they themselves notice it. Like, it's so unequally applied when it is an administration that they'll permit all kinds of.
Well, I think it's because they're arguing that they're both under like some kind of, I don't know, like they feel warm and fuzzy, like a human rights issue. You know what I mean? So it's like leave the border open and you let the hungry and the suffering, which they exist. But the problem is everybody else that might come along with them, let them into the country to have a better life. And then while they're here, it's like you can't just deport them. Then you have the principle of due process, which I absolutely believe in. And again, I emphasize, I don't think we should just be sending people to this insane prison, El Salvador, with there has to be like a better way to do this. You know what I mean? So you don't end up with an innocent in this prison.
You have to define innocent, though. You're going to have a lot of people who are like, well, because I had a lot of people in my more left-leaning friends or progressive followers who started coming into the chat when I was sharing my opinions about this. And their idea of what is illegal differs from mine. So it's almost like they look at it like once a person has entered our country, whether it's illegal or not, they're on an equal playing field with like American citizens. And I'm definitely not saying you do that. Absolutely not. But it's almost like they kind of forget that being in our country illegally and entering illegally without claiming asylum or trying to become a citizen, anything, they kind of wipe that away as that's not a crime. And so I had a lot of people go, well, what has he done? has he committed any crimes? And I'm like, well, yeah, the crime of him being in our country as
illegally. But that doesn't merit him going to an El Salvadorian supermax prison. That merits him being deported to El Salvador.
Yeah, do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not arguing that one way or another. I'm simply saying it's interesting to me the way progressives and my Democrat friends will almost view illegal immigration as a non-issue. It's, well, wouldn't you want a better life if you didn't live in America and you wanted to come here? And they'll keep going back to that argument as opposed to, yeah, there's consequences. And I think that we have to be able to say that. I know that there is that sympathetic streak in all of us, but the point is that if you enter the country illegally, you have committed a crime. And there's, I think that some people don't want to accept that.
Well, I guess my question is that in this context, because you were talking about when you were sharing about these ideas, like in this context, are they asking that, what did he do that was a crime? Are they asking that specifically because, again, like, you shouldn't be sending him to that prison versus, now I'm not saying, I have no idea. The thing is that with Garcia, there is a debate of whether or not he's MS-13 and what he did and whether or not he should be in that prison. But let's just say if he was, let's say he was the narrative. He was a dad. He just happened to be at the Home Depot. He wasn't caught trafficking this person and didn't have this domestic issue and all that kind of stuff. Okay, deport him to go to El Salvador, but don't put him in the prison. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because he didn't really commit any crime.
I can agree with that. That really isn't what most people are arguing, surprisingly. It's more, yeah, he's here illegally, but he didn't commit any crime, so why are we deporting him?
That, I think,
more,
is crazy
more like
to
that,
me.
Which is a fun, it is crazy, but people really do not like, well, progressives really don't like the idea of deportation. They don't like the idea of illegal immigration. That's why they are so up in arms about this argument, this fundamental conversation that's going to have to be had by the Supreme Court about birthright citizenship. They just don't want to have it. They're like, no, we can't have this conversation. If you're here, you're born here, doesn't matter the status of your parents, blah, blah, blah. So I'm hearing less about people having a problem with him being put into that supermax prison, which we can discuss that. I think that's a conversation that should be had. It's more, for them, even more foundational. Just like, he's here, he's illegal, there's got to be a better way to get him a pathway to citizenship. And I'm like, you guys are missing the point. And I would argue, too, I don't think that he is innocent. I think he did commit crimes. He beat his girlfriend or his wife, and he was driving without a license, trafficking people from one state to another. Those are
that
crimes.
Alone merits. Yes, but that merits deportation. I don't know if those two things specifically merit being
supermax
in that prison. Now, if you deport him to El Salvador, let's just say like the United States just says, you got to go home. You deport him. El Salvador accepts him. And El Salvador decides you're MS-13 affiliated.
Yeah, you're going.
You're going into the prison. Well, that's up to them. Because at that point, hands off. But I don't, because arguably one of the issues with El Salvador in this prison is there are arguments that they have basically done away with due process, which is problematic, but it's also not my country. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, but I'm also having a lot of people, I've just been getting lots of angry letters from people liking my
hardline
stance
right.
on illegal. And yes, I'm not. But lots of people sending me lists of what this supermax prison does and does not do. And they were like, would Jesus like this prison? I'm like, well, okay. We are not.
Look, let me clarify that the majority of the individuals that are in this prison have raped, murdered, mutilated, molested innocents, okay? Women and children.
So would Jesus like that?
Like,
that's my question. I'm not going to get into that argument with people. But what I am saying, though, is that people cannot think clearly about these issues, or it's hard to, because of the way media portrays it. It is
manipulative.
It's emotionally charged. And it is. I understand it's humanity we're talking about here, but there is nuance and we have to be able to talk about it. And voting Trump, we have to be able to say, I don't love this part about it. And I think we could also talk, and I don't know, do you have this in the notes later on? Or should the White House press briefing last night?
I was about to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching it as I'm driving home with my husband, and Rachel Moran's mother was invited to a press briefing with Caroline Leavitt. And Caroline Leavitt frames it, talks about what's happening with Garcia, but also just basically talking about illegal immigration, how Trump is trying to solve this problem we have with millions and millions of people just let loose in our country under the Biden administration, and how it's wreaking havoc.
Are dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Very dangerous. And it's wreaking havoc on families. It's a disaster for some families. And specifically, Rachel Moran's mother was offered an opportunity to speak, and it was compelling and heartbreaking. And as a mother of four daughters, I'm sitting there on the verge of tears listening to this mother. I can feel that heavy ache she must be feeling, not just in that moment, but every single day she wakes up, knowing, as she said, this is the baby I carried in my womb, I held. It's my child. So I was feeling so much when I was listening to her, and also on the back channels talking to you and saying something. It felt weird. I didn't like it felt performative to me, not her, not the mother. Absolutely not. She has every right to be able to speak. I wish more people were speaking to her and on her behalf to really highlight the problem of illegal immigration and the dangers it poses to our country and to families and communities. But it was hard for me, her being brought in surrounding this specific situation that's happening, as almost a, this is why we had to do it. Look at what happens when we don't handle it. Which is arguably true. When things aren't handled, these things happen. Thanks, Biden administration, for doing nothing.
Not doing your job.
Yeah. But I don't know. How'd you feel about it? I feel weird even saying I didn't love it, because I absolutely appreciate and am so happy that she had a platform to speak, especially when Caroline Leavitt was like, do any of you have questions?
And nobody asked a question.
Yeah, rightfully good. They all closed their mouths and didn't say anything, because nothing they asked could have made more of an emphasis than she already made, the mother. And then Caroline Leavitt walks out to go escort the mom out, and she turns around and she looks at the press and she basically says, please just tell the truth. Just tell the truth. Can you guys do that? This is a national security safety issue. And I was so happy she did that. And also, it was hard for me.
When I initially watched it, when we were talking, I know exactly what you're thinking. And then I started to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think maybe my opinion changed a little bit. So because when I initially watched it, what bothered me, and again, this is just my nature of, again, being very focused on like due process, and I don't believe in guilt by association and that sort of thing. And so that natural instinct of mine, mm-hmm, was what bothered me, was that the pairing of the two created a moment of guilt by association. Now, Garcia, you can say maybe is MS-13 or MS-13 affiliated. He was trafficking people. Obviously, yeah, the trafficking of individuals is what allows for situations like Rachel Moran to happen. Mm-hmm. And so he is facilitating that just, yes, by doing that. But also at the same time, the murder of Rachel Moran was horrific. And she laid out the case in very vivid detail, which I think was absolutely necessary.
Yes.
But Garcia didn't do that.
Yeah, well, putting the two, what I had a hard time was with putting the two of them together in that moment. It felt exploitative. That's how it felt to me. Like you said, when I started initially watching, I'm like, why are they doing this? Rachel Moran deserves her own story. She deserves, and her mom deserves to be able to tell her. Now, that was her choice to come and do that. So she was happy to do it. She said it was one of the most important moments of her life.
And I think she requested it too,
yes,
or something.
And so that, I think performative is the wrong word when I used that earlier. I felt, that this feels like they're exploiting the situation with Rachel Moran to gain support for what they are doing with Garcia, which I largely agree with. So that's not what I had a problem with. I was just like, it felt, I don't know, like they were using the story of Rachel Morin, and in a way they are, and they need to highlight what is really going on. But it was difficult for me for some reason. But you know what? It was the Morin family's choice, and that mother stood up there. And so she sees the importance of discussing what actually happens. So,
well, and then that's why I said that the more I thought about it, because that was my initial kind of like reaction too. And then the more I thought about it this morning, actually, I was like, look, if she had not been given that opportunity, the media would not be discussing it. Do you know what I mean?
You're right about that.
Nobody's going to be searching her out and doing an interview for her.
Yep.
I think maybe does Garcia need glove holding protection or anything like that? I'm like, ultimately, yeah, he didn't rape and murder, and he didn't do, I guess, anything as horrific as that we know of, let's put it that way, as what happened with Maitre Morin. But he is, if he was trafficking, he was caught trafficking these seven people, what other people did he traffic in order to make a living? Yeah. And what happened with those people? Yeah. Why were those people trafficked? Are they being trafficked to be exploited for sex trafficking? Or are they being trafficked to get into the United States and then commit a horrendous crime like this? He may not be to the level of what happened to Morin, but if what is now coming out is true, he is definitely facilitating that.
Yes.
And so the more I thought about it, like the pairing the two together makes sense. It's like maybe it wasn't just as bad, but he is contributing to the system that led to the death of people like Lincoln Riley and Rachel Morin.
Yeah.
And that needs to be, and the fact of the matter is that the media is not paying attention to the horrible end result of what even like the small cog person like Garcia, let's just say he's low level,
impact on actual lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they're not just not paying attention. They're being straight up, like, I don't even know the word. I keep using the word callous, but that's what it is. I mean, you have legislators that are saying that refuse to vote for something like the Lake and Riley Act, or not only just refuse to vote for it, but are like, this is harmful.
And it's
like,
or what? Later take or deciding that
taking
they regret
it back. Like, yeah, I regret my vote. You got to be kidding me. So it's just, and I think you're right. I think this is why you and I always say take a beat, don't respond right away, because my initial feelings about that presser last night, they changed, and they definitely changed as I watched the mother's response. This mother has been through something that I wouldn't wish on anyone, any human in the world, and yet she found value in standing up there and sharing Rachel Morin's story. And so I want to respect that and think she knows better than I do about this, and she deserves that, because the media is not giving her that opportunity, save maybe like Fox News, but nobody's listening to her story. And so I'm glad that she was given that platform. It just felt politicky to me, I guess.
But it did. I get what you're...
So,
well, and when you say exploitive, it initially felt a little exploitive for me, not by the administration, but then at the same time, I started to think about it and I was like, it's kind of unfair to say that it was exploitive as if Rachel's mother was being taken advantage of and taking away her autonomy. Do you know what I mean? To make that decision and to give voice to her daughter. So I was like, she knows what she's doing and she knows whether or not she wants to do it. And
yes,
and she's within her. And I mean,
like, it doesn't really matter what I think in that situation.
And what am I, especially like if a mother comes up to you and says, will you let me speak for my daughter? What is the administration going to say? No. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Even if they think it's,
I mean,
like
the last administration would have said no, but
but I don't know. We will see how this, to say this is not the end. It's not the end. What I'm very interested to see is like how the media now responds, because I would argue that even though I still believe legally, the administration has a hurdle, you know what I mean? And that they would have made their life so much easier if they just would have brought him back. Now, the challenge is that for the administration, they still have this legal hurdle. Like the narrative of like, he didn't have due process is still there. However, the political narrative I would argue has possibly changed. And so it remains to be seen, because if this was any other person that, let's say, collectively the media thought was not worth their time and effort because mm-hmm. they're such a horrible person that really they can't get enough eyes or people to care about how this person has done wrong. Do you know what I mean? Which I'm not justifying that, like, obviously, but I'm just saying if it was switched, they wouldn't be so concerned about the fact that he got deported or that he was sent away or that they wouldn't be portraying him in this way, because otherwise they would have been telling you the truth from the get-go with a little bit more of a neutral tone. Do you understand what I'm saying? So now my question is that now that he's come out, we're talking about the Democrat Party. He's always been super concerned about women's rights and men are dangerous and toxic and all this kind of stuff. And so now that you have him coming out as looking like he was stopped while the Biden administration, trafficking individuals and was released into the country. Like, what if one of those individuals that he was trafficking murdered someone or hurt someone? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, and he beat his wife.
He beat his wife.
What about women's rights there?
And then you have that kind of tied now with the Rachel Morin story. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, you have this, what is that? Van Holden, the Chris Van Holden, the senator from Maryland, who's more concerned about going to El Salvador and performs and gets denied a visit because he wanted to visit Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
He's more concerned about that when one of his own constituents was like murdered by someone of possibly the same gang affiliation.
I think a lot of this is battle of optics. I really do. And I think that Van Holen is going to lose. It's going to look so much worse to Republicans than it looks good to Democrats. I mean,
especially when this narrative starts to shift. Like, if this narrative shifts and we enter into an election season and now you have video evidence out there of this person was protecting this gang member, if you put them back into office, they're just going to allow all the work that the Trump administration did to be undone. Yep. It's not going to be great for you. So like politically, it's not great. Now, the challenge that the administration still has, though, is that the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the land, did essentially say to the lower court, like, you need to define things, which gives the narrative that he still needs to be returned and he still has to go through due process. And so for the administration to not act on that and to come off as defying the Supreme Court feeds into the narrative of the administration being rogue or whatever. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And on that note, I know we're running out of time, but on that note too, what else happened last night was that the federal district court judge, Boasberg, he threatened criminal contempt for the Trump officials. So he basically is considering criminal contempt charges against the Trump officials who, quote unquote, defied the order to halt the deportation and turn the plane around mid-flight.
This is another
was headed to El Salvador. So the flights carrying the alleged Venezuelan gang members, they continued. And now, last night, this was filed. And basically, he's saying the way that you can get out of this criminal contempt charge is you need to return Garcia. So that's the way you can solve this problem. And it's a big deal when they're saying that, because there could be penalties. I mean, unlikely, but there can be jail time. And all we're saying is that it's not going away. It's going to get messy and it's going to have huge implications for 2026. Masady and I are always looking at what is coming soon. And nobody likes to think about it, but the midterms will be upon us very quickly. And all of these stories we're sharing with you, they will determine 2026.
The outcome. Yeah,
they really will.
They'll have an effect. And the battle of the narrative on this one and how it pans out will definitely have, because it'll be either that the Trump administration has successfully protected the United States, or it'll be that he is a rogue that's going, because right now everybody's, well, what if I end up getting caught up and sent to El Salvador? And I'm just like,
Okay, stop, white lady from Idaho. Okay, stop it.
All right, so that's it for Garcia for now. But
It's Thursday. We have earmarks and we have a question. So we're going to buzz
through
these.
Well, we have earmarks because we weren't here on Tuesday.
I know. So we're going to go through these very, very fast. But we think you need to know about these. We just don't have enough time to give to all of them. So first earmark is the DOJ sues Maine over Title IX violations. You'll remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about the spat that Donald Trump and President Trump and what's her name?
The Maine governor. I forget her name.
Yes. They had at the governor's breakfast where Trump was basically like, you need to get it together and get boys out of girls' sports or I'm pulling your funding. And she was like, whatever, bye,
me.
Felicia.
Bring it.
Yeah. So he did. He brought it. It has been brought in. The Department of Justice is taking Maine to court, alleging the state, they're not complying with Title IX, which ensures equal opportunities in education, including sports. So basically, this is about Maine allowing, and one school in particular, allowing boys to play in girls' sports. That's it.
Yeah,
so
and the mayor's just, there's only two of them. And I'm like,
don't care. Not a good argument. Stop it. That is a horrible argument. Stop using it. Everybody, all of you. Okay, next is that the Trump administration freezes Harvard's federal funds. The Trump administration is reviewing nearly $9 billion in federal grants to Harvard, citing concerns over anti-Semitism.
$9 billion.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have time. We don't have time, but I could do a whole episode on this because it is interesting. Because I have thoughts that some people might not think. So last night, too, the Trump administration made a step to pull Harvard's tax-exempt status, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is something that people need to talk about, especially conservatives and Christians. Like, there's a lot there, a lot. But all that to say, Harvard is doubling down and don't care. We have a huge endowment. We are not going to...
So proud of them.
Oh, yeah. My favorite, too. Obama's so proud of them. Look at what they're doing. It's not right what he's doing. Obama's administration sued Hillsdale College and tried to pull their tax-exempt status, and they don't even receive federal funding from the government. So, bye. Go away. Bye-bye. Okay, next. Arson attempt at Shapiro's mansion tied to Palestine stance. So, a man arrested. By the way, if you guys have not seen his picture... That guy, he's a wackadoodle. He is. I mean, he is making weird faces at the camera. He's icky. He was arrested for trying to burn down Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. He's a Democrat. His home. They say that he was motivated by Shapiro's position on Palestine.
Which is
him being a Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this anti-Semite decided to burn it down.
Exactly.
Although you're not hearing that in the media either. You're just hearing this crazy guy burned it down. What they're not mentioning is that he is pro-Palestinian anti-Semite. So we'll just
clear that one up. He's also like super socialist. Like he's not a registered Republican or Democrat or anything like that. I think he's the commie socialist type Antifa. I mean,
not going to hear that. You're not going to hear that in the news.
Mm-mm. That type.
Yep. California. They sued the Trump administration yesterday over tariffs. So California suing, challenging the new tariffs is harmful to its economy. The state argues the tariffs, part of Trump's trade agenda, obviously, that we've been talking about, could raise costs for consumers and businesses. I mean, it's one of the hugest economies so professional. One of the hugest economies in our country and in the world, arguably. So
did you see the video that he posted? People were like, either he's high or he looked like he was crying. Like something was up. His eyes were all red.
I tried to avoid watching all videos, including Gavin Newsom. Okay, next, Dan Caldwell escorted from Pentagon as alleged leaker. So a top advisor to Pete Hegseth, Dan Caldwell, was removed from the Pentagon yesterday. I believe it was yesterday.
I think that it was Tuesday.
Okay. After being identified as a leaker in a probe. So could this be Signalgate? I don't know. We'll see. This incident raises questions about security, obviously. So we'll see what happens in the coming days about that. We just mentioned Judge Boasberg threatening the contempt for Trump officials. They're really not backing down on Trump. And then, of course, as many of you watched yesterday, RFKJ had his inaugural presser where he wanted to talk about what his plans are, especially for finding the cause for autism. He talked about all kinds of different contributing things like environmental toxins, medicines, all kinds of things that could contribute to this rise in autism from what he said were basically autistic kids were non-existent when he was a child. And now it's even gone up from 2020, where it was 1 in 34 children, I believe, and now it's 1 in 31 boys insane. It is insane. And so he gave a presser about that, talking about the MAHA movement and that they're hoping to have an answer by September. And then, of course, the media just went on their tirade about how he is anti-vaccine, how this is not okay, how the only reason we know about all of these autistic kids, they always existed, but now because we are able to test for it, we know.
You know what's funny? I was thinking about that talking point. It is the same talking point that they used in regards to transgenderism.
Well, and homosexuality in general.
Yeah.
They say
so.
That, yeah.
But we'll see. But also worth mentioning that it's not on here. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal had an exclusive where the administration is currently working with several countries with a main purpose of basically freezing China out, which would coincide with Trump is going to be heading to Japan to have one-on-one talks in regards to tariff and trade negotiations.
Yeah. And also in Wall Street Journal was an expose about Elon Musk's
baby
efforts
mama
to repopulate the earth. Yeah.
Yeah. With so Ashley.
He wants,
what's her name? Ashley.
St. Clair.
I forgot her last name. St. something.
St. Clair.
St. Clair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting article.
That was interesting.
Okay. Do you have a member question?
I do. I have two member questions, and we're going to make them somewhat quick in the interest of time because I wanted to ask more than one because I have so many. Maybe I'll ask three. Let's see. Okay. If we can get this one's easy. Okay. So wait, where'd it go? Abigail Hott asked, coffee or tea and why? So go.
Coffee.
Or tea? Obviously. Coffee.
Well, first of all, I'm Puerto Rican, so duh, obviously.
Yeah. Yes.
Coffee, I've been drinking coffee as long as I can remember. I mean, because even back home, like as a child, obviously it's like you get your bottle with milk and they'll like just put a little bit of coffee in it so you can drink coffee with your parents. Like I've been drinking coffee for as long as I can remember. Coffee is dessert. Yeah. I drink coffee at 8 o'clock at night. You know what I mean?
That's insane. I drink it after 2 p.m. I'm up for the night.
And it's coffee, café con leche, coffee, steamed milk. That's it. Espresso, by the way, not drip coffee because that's sacrilege, but whatever.
Sorry, I just had drip coffee this morning. Whoops. Okay, so yeah, coffee for me too. All right, next up, Katie McComb said, favorite movie and why?
I would say probably it's hard for me sometimes to say what my favorite movie is, but one of the ones that I always go back to is Primal Fear. I'm really dark. Oh,
you really are. Around every corner.
Actually, better than that. This is very conflicting, but also Gone with the Wind.
Oh, I do like it. I showed my girls that for the first time. I think it was last year on a Sunday. And we made it like 2 hours in. And we had to watch the rest the next night. But they did love it. They really
did. I do love those old epics like Gone with the Wind, Ben-Hur, the Ten Commandments. Like those that just went on forever. Cleopatra. I really like those. Mm-hmm. But I would say if I was asked, what is your favorite in the moment? The two that I would probably go to, which are very opposite, are either Gone with the Wind and Primal Fear. If you don't know what Primal Fear is, that's with it's with Richard Gere and Edward Norton. And Edward Norton's one of his first movies. And it's a really good movie. And it has kind of almost like a Sixth Sense kind of twist at the end.
Okay.
But it's about a murder. And of course, it's about murder.
Of course it is. It's Miss Sadie. Anybody who knows me knows that my favorite... It's hard to say favorite movies because especially with kids, we've watched so many animated movies. There's so many Disney classics, so many just classics. I mean, my kids have seen everything from The King and I to like Chariots of Fire to all of these different movies, The Quiet Man and tons. So lots of it's wrapped up in memories for me, really. It's not necessarily even the quality of the movie. It's who I saw it with and when and why. But my favorite all-time movie is Mary Poppins, and it always has been. It's a comfort movie for me. I can recite the entire movie. I know all the little details about the filming. I love the music, and I've seen it on Broadway multiple times. It's always been my favorite. And because that's how I remember London. It's how I remember, it's kind of in my mind what London is, even though it's not at all. But that's what I wish it to be in my memory. That's what it is. In my mind, that's what it is. So anyways, that's my favorite movie of all time. I love it.
That's very on brand.
Yes, it is. It is. Okay, last question. In fact, my first blog that I started like 19 years ago, it was called Cherry Tree Lane. And that was before I had kids or anything like that. And so if there's anyone on here who followed way back when, they'll remember it. It was Cherry Tree Lane. So anyways, okay. Which is the name of the street in Mary Poppins, if you don't know. Okay, last question. Yes. Did you? Well, I mean, not everybody's in love with Mary Poppins, I'll just say. And I mean, anyways, I could go on forever about all these movies. I won't. All right, Lenora for Liberty. Hi, Lenora. It's Lenore, not Lenora, excuse me. Lenora for Liberty asked, what did you want to be when you grew up? Did you get to do it, or did life take you on another path? Mercedes?
Well, I wanted to be an attorney. Shocker.
That's on brand.
Surprising. I wanted to be a lawyer for a long time. My undergrad was pre-law, and I had just enough experience while I was in undergrad to work as a legal assistant and paralegal, which I did for 10 years at law offices. And then I was like, I do not want to be a lawyer.
No, thank you.
I think the challenging thing is that I still do, and I still would have wanted to, but to do what I really wanted to do would have required like an extreme amount of time and dedication, yeah, because there's only a very small group of people that could get to be like a prosecutor or FBI. You know what I mean? I wanted to do something that was much more at the constitutional level. And I didn't have the money or the time to put that in.
Yeah.
And so otherwise, I was just going to end up, if I did go to law school, I was going to end up doing some bread and butter, like personal injury, something or another. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I would prefer to jump off a bridge than do something like that. Yeah. Anything that had to do, it was just boring.
But now you can bring those skills or that skill set to Rivera and Reeves.
Yeah. That's well, and then instead, I did a hard right and ended up as a chef for a while. Yeah. I went to culinary school and stuff like that. And now I'm back. Just giving my opinions, reading briefs.
I love it. You are our resident attorney.
No, I'm not.
Okay, so for me, I wanted to go into broadcast journalism. So my first year of college, I really did want to be like an anchor on the news. From the time I was like five, I would sit and I would watch. I remember like Barbara Wawa and Matt Lauer, Katie Couric. I would just sit and watch them talk every morning. And I loved watching 60 Minutes. I wanted to go in some type of broadcast journalism. And then I did what a lot of ladies did who happened to be good with kids. I went into teaching, and that manifested in other ways, homeschooling my kids and whatnot. Yeah, I've always wanted to do something in the journalism realm. So this is actually kind of cool to see how God was like, nope, it's not going to work like that. And 25 years later, I'm getting to have my own brand of whatever we
call it. Yeah, it's actually really cool with the times changing that it's more accessible to different people, that even if you put it aside for a while, you can do it in a different way.
Yeah.
And it's a good outlet for me personally, because I have always been like this. Like whenever I'm like following a story or whatever, and I want to know more, I wouldn't share it with anyone, but I'm like still pulling articles and briefs and reports and things like that, because I love researching and I love to know things. Like,
Well, God knows our passions. And if it doesn't happen the way we try and orchestrate it, I feel like he knows us, and he knows the things our skills that he's uniquely given us. And it's been neat to watch some of those.
Honestly, it works out better. My personality isn't exactly the most agreeable. So to be
told, can you imagine if you were in the courtroom and like you would be mispronouncing the judge's name? You wouldn't remember the name of who you were defending or prosecuting. It would be a barrage of mispronunciation. So this is good. You could do it here and edit it out.
What are you suggesting? Or what are you suggesting?
Me and all the listeners know exactly what I'm suggesting.
My gosh, this is so funny.
So that's it. Thanks for those questions from our paid subscribers. We love you guys. You are the very
best. Yeah, I didn't even do my regular intro. I was like straight into it. So that's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. If you would consider becoming a paying supporter, you would get the bonus of getting ad-free episodes. community, exclusive subscriber chats, and there was something else. Oh, and our monthly unfiltered episode, which is bonus content. Yeah. So that's it. That's all we have for today's episode. And in the meantime, I guess we will see you again on Tuesday, where I will be back home in my normal setup, ready to go. So that's it. We're gone. Here's a reminder. Clearly, this episode has proved it, that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. All right, folks. Bye.
Bye.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.